that's interesting stuff. But we've got our own interesting stuff we have to get on with. This is your Civil Rights Show every Sunday, Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Please stay tuned for the next 2.5 hours. We have interviews from San Diego, Berkeley, reprise of Representative Farr's Fandango at the Civic Auditorium, and increased reports from Yugoslavia, where the bombs, as far as I know, as of this point, are still falling, plus updates from the protest yesterday, and lots of interesting stories around basic civil rights of homeless people here in Santa Cruz and around the San Francisco and East Bay area. Stay tuned.
Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Rock, Roy Kahn, one for all, Tuscanini, Dacron, Gin, Gin, two balls, rock around the clock. Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Prince's Place, Katie Grace, Trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire, it was always violent since the world began.
Sunday. It's June 7th. Is that where we're at? Or are we at June 6th? We're June 6th still. I'm your host, Bathroom Spear, Robert Norris, and this will be a 2.5 hour show. Thank you, William. Which has call-ins. So if you're interested, give us a call at 427-3772. If anything that we're saying here excites your interest, your anger, your admiration, whatever, if you think that you can be a part of this dialogue, and please, be generous with yourself. You probably have more to say than you know. People are usually rather shy and reticent about calling in until they get used to it. It's important that you do get used to that, because your voice has to be heard in the community, along with those of others, for there to be a real community that is functional. I'm concerned particularly about civil rights for poor people. I'm concerned about the war in Yugoslavia. Those are going to be the main issues I'm discussing. And first, before we go any further, a couple of announcements, which perhaps I'll repeat later on in the show, and perhaps I won't. Hopefully, you'll be able to hear this again at some point. 11:30 today on Pacific Avenue at Cathcart and Pacific, there's going to be a gay pride march to San Lorenzo Park, and then kind of a festival there all day. We're looking to see the homeless homosexual brigade out of the closets and out of the woods signs, but who knows whether that's going to happen. There has been a lot of concern lately about beatings of homeless people because of their homeless status, just as gay men, lesbian women find themselves targeted for violence, irrational hate crime violence. And I'm really thinking this is a natural alliance between people who are targeted because they're homeless and people who are targeted because they're gay. Just anyone who feels this is the wrong thing to take action to not just deal with the culprits of these assaults, more than 15 since January, but also to take some kind of preventive measure so that people sleeping outside in vulnerable areas have some kind of recourse, a safe sleeping zone where they don't have to worry about hiding and dispersing to get away from police harassment because of the anti-homeless sleeping ban that Mayor Byers and her city council reaffirmed on March 23rd, making it a crime to sleep after 11 o'clock at night or cover up with blankets, a $54 crime, which I can't think of any homeless person who can really afford that. Even most of us who are in homes would be hard-pressed to spend 54 bucks a night for every act of sleeping, you know, or to have to worry about that as an added pressure for falling asleep. We're hoping to get a phone call from Phil Baer, who's going to continue talking about his alternate plan for real affordable housing in the Beach Flats and his campaign to expose and thwart the Dolphin Lee Project, which is apparently a leftover from the beach boardwalk boondoggle. The spirit of Kennedy and Rotkin is not dead. It still walks the halls, and apparently it got some positive hearing from Councilmember Chris Crone yesterday. Chris was at the 1 o'clock, was it 1 o'clock? Yeah, it was 1 o'clock peace march that we had down the avenue against stopping the bombing, sort of in sympathy with those in San Francisco and Washington who showed up by the thousands. I understand there were, I heard this phrase, was it 4,000 or 8,000 in the march in San Francisco, although I heard only a few hundred on the national news wires were in Washington, which sounded very unlikely to me. If anybody has any reports on how many people actually attended these protests, or you want to talk about them, please call in. I'm eager to hear some on-the-spot descriptions. I did get a kind of a report from a homeless activist, or an activist who we often consult for the news on Berkeley, John Vance, but we really need to hear what's going on from those of you who are in Santa Cruz who were there. At least I'd like to. We're going to be having an interview with Mike Rotkin next Thursday, big time. It's going to be 2 hours of knockdown, drag out, puncheroony between me and him around the sleeping ban and other issues that we began to talk about with Lou Rice in the studio last Thursday. I guess it was even before that. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago Thursday. Rotkin also is going to be kind of the focus of some of our discussion because he has come out squarely critical of the Steve Argue defense movement. I'm going to read you something he wrote over the email. Steve Argue, as you may know, is a protester who came to prominence, well, public prominence 6 months ago when police threw him to the ground, roughed him up, dragged him off to jail, charged him with a misdemeanor and a felony. I think it was resisting arrest and assault on an officer. And all this as a subsequent response to his selling the street newspaper Street Spirit in front of New Leaf Market. And of course, since that is a legal thing to do, the cop was wrong from the get-go. That was Officer Grim Grip Garner. And he fucked up. But he didn't want to apologize because that would make the city vulnerable for a lawsuit. So instead, they have continued to maintain this facade that it was appropriate police behavior. In a letter from Chief Belcher to me, he explained that Steve's real crime was obstructing the sidewalk, even though apparently that phrase does not appear in the police report on the issue at all. So it's interesting. If he were obstructing the sidewalk, what was the problem and why was Officer Garner telling him his real crime was selling a newspaper without a permit, the same thing Garner told me several hours later. Anyway, that's how Steve Argue first came to prominence. He was recently arrested for resisting arrest and felony battery on a police officer, I believe, in an incident arising out of the May 22nd rowdy but not violent protest at the McPherson Center, where Sam Farr was helping a Democratic fundraiser, as the massive government violence of the most incredible and often indiscriminate sort was going on over the skies of Yugoslavia, and the folks inside the banquet were having a gay old time, toasting each other and listening to mariachi music. And then they came out, then apparently the cops came out and arrested a woman for having a boombox that they claimed, according to the Sentinel story, that she stuck in the door. Apparently they didn't explain to protesters what was going on here. They didn't explain to the woman being arrested what she was being arrested for. They had no complaints about the people who were making probably as much noise as the boombox right outside. It seemed to those that there was an arbitrary arrest. I was there, and it seemed strange to me. And in response, a lot of people did surround the paddy wagon, no question about it, and demanded to know the police what was going on. Now, Rotkin comments on this that I'm going to read you his statement in a moment, which apparently put out over the internet. This is Councilmember Rotkin, also a he's not a professor, but he teaches up at UCSC in the community studies. He's an instructor, that's what he's called. And he also is one of the few council members who actually has the courage or arrogance or bad judgment or good judgment to appear on my show. So I'm always glad that we can get somebody in here who is at least distantly, well, he's not distantly connected with power. He's in the middle of the power structure, but he has lost a bit of his power when his endorsed candidates lost in the last election. But he's still vying for power, and looks like his ideology, at least in the Beach Flats, is still making headway there. Crone and Sugar and Fitzmaurice among them seem to be picking up the ball, at least on the Dolphin Lee housing project, which, again, is a bulldoze the residents who are already there. They keep the Seaside Company untouchable, don't go after their property at all, but get rid of the activists who last fall, the Hispanic activists who exposed this whole thing, and send them down the road. It's a very, very kind of questionable and, one has to say, malicious-looking activity, all under the name of affordable housing, so good liberals on scan can jump on board. Again, we're talking about Rotkin and Steve Argue. I don't want to get too lost, and all these topics seem to kind of tie together. So, anyway, Argue was arrested for assault, but several witnesses saw him being beaten by police after he got into an altercation with Officer Lefebvre. And Lefebvre was, according to Tracy D'Angelo, beating him with a nightstick, pepper spraying him in the mouth and at close range down the throat in an illegal procedure. And you won't find any of this in Rotkin's statements. Rotkin apparently doesn't believe those protesters. But anyway, here's what Rotkin has to say about it. You might want to know that according to the protesters that I have spoken with, Mr. Argue tried to physically step in, stop an officer from arresting someone else at a demonstration, never a good idea, by blindsiding the officer with a punch to the face. Then Argue ran off and the officer chased him down, tackled him. The two of them wrestled on the ground. Most witnesses say no nightstick was involved. And no one that I have spoken with has alleged that any officers kicked anybody. When Argue continued to resist arrest, other officers jumped into the fray, and an officer did pepper spray him until he stopped resisting. The implication that Argue is either nonviolent or just plucked out of a legal demonstration or even a civil disobedience action is highly misleading. One or more officers may have been overzealous and need to be disciplined, and the city is involved in a complete review of the incident. Excuse me. I wasn't there, and everything I know about the event I got from Argue's own writing about it and comments from other protesters. I don't know what the police version is, but according to everything I have heard, Argue deserved to be at least arrested and was appropriately charged with resisting arrest and, I think, assault on a police officer. Please feel free to send this note to anyone else you circulated your earlier report to, Mike Rotkin. A couple of comments. There's some false statements in here and some misleading ones. Mike has Mr. Schmooze Extraordinaire. He really is, he bubbles out this amiable babble at such a speed that it's really difficult to let it, to kind of parse it and examine it closely. But let's try to do that. The facts of Argue's case are going to come out in court. I think he's going to argue, has suggested at one point, he's using a defense of others' argument, or his attorney may be using that. I have never seen any videotape that shows Argue punching Officer Lefevre. There is rumored about that there is such a tape. I don't say that it didn't happen. There are witnesses with conflicting reports on that. The question then is, if you assume he did, why did it happen? Was it justified? Was it an act of anger or malice or perversity or some sort of, ideological, I'm hostile to the police thing? Or did it have to do with something Officer Lefevre was doing with respect to a woman and her child? And of course, all the protesters I've talked to said it had to do with something that was being done to a woman and child. And the fact that the officer was acting inappropriately and brutalizing them both, and it upset the crowd considerably. Now, I don't usually recommend, and nor does Mike Rotkin recommend, this kind of behavior around police. It's physically dangerous. It distracts attention from the main cause of the protest, which is stopping the bombing. But I think it also has to be said that under some circumstances, people will react, particularly in a situation that the police seem to have provoked, this kind of this maelstrom. And one has to some extent assign responsibility evenly here. And the problem with Rotkin here, one of the officers may need to be overzealous and need to be disciplined, and the city is involved in a complete review of the incident. Well, the last time that this happened, and the officer was obviously overzealous when Argue was knocked to the ground 6 months ago in the incident I talked about, there was no city review of this incident, even though two council members had stood with Argue the night before in a rally against police brutality. These guys could not get it together to get any kind of review going, nor could Rotkin. There was no such review, and there generally is no review of police behavior, except insofar as the ineffectual Citizens Police Review Board, which does nothing more than look over the shoulders of the police department and look at their reports. This is a body that's never had a public hearing, that's never had an independent investigation, that's never had an early investigation that rubber-stamped the killing of Happy John Dine, even though every non-police witness said that Dine was shot by police allegedly for brandishing a toy weapon or reaching for a toy weapon. Every non-police officer saw no such thing. And that, whether he was doing so or not is not the question. There was no investigation of it. And Rotkin's claim that these matters are investigated is horseshit. And that's the problem. Rotkin makes these comments with a straight face and with a smile and all the, the best looking facade in the world, and they're just not true. And people just don't understand that, because, why would such a man lie in such a friendly fashion? And in the midst of six other statements he's making. By the way, I asked Mike to call in to the show, or at least to listen in if he feels anything that's being said is false or he wants to dispute it. He'll have the opportunity to do that. The phone number for you to call in is 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And we are a talk show, so please feel free to call in. Rotkin continues in his letter, "In case any of you are wondering who I am the Santa Cruz council member who authored the first city council resolution in the country against the bombing in the former Yugoslavia. It passed unanimously." Mm-hmm. "In case I wondered why he was doing this," and Rotkin has not shown up in any peace protests, has not shown up in any nonviolent occupations of Farr's office. He is, as far as I know, been completely divorced himself from any public protest on the war other than this resolution. The resolution was a good resolution, but it also has gives him political mileage. It has a certain political payoff for him. Those of us who risk going to jail by getting arrested in Farr's office, and I was one of those people, we did it twice. Turns out they said they were dropping the charges, and we'll find out an arraignment comes up tomorrow or the next day whether that's true. We took risks. Rotkin, waited 8 weeks while they bombed the shit out of the Yugoslavs and finally comes up with a resolution. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Good resolution. But he didn't want to call, for example, for amnesty for the protesters in any way. Even the nonviolent, certifiably nonviolent protesters who sat in at Farr's office. And I would have to say generally that the protesters at the McPherson Center, as I said, they were noisy, they were rowdy, they were not violent. You know, nobody was physically attacked, except possibly for Officer David Lefevre, whose response was to club the shit out of Steve Argue. And I'm sorry, that's not the right response. And the claim that this is all going to be investigated carefully and methodically, if the past is any indication, is just not true. And the community has to know that. Anyway, continuing reading with Rodkin's statement. Rodkin calls, says, I'm a longtime anti-war and social justice activist, except, of course, for basic rights for homeless people, like the right to sleep. And those of you who heard of my show with him know that he constantly defends the police for and the city council for criminalizing sleeping at night for homeless people. It's just not important. Or it's one of those things that ranks up there with dental care. You know, we don't have adequate dental care for the homeless. That's also a problem. We don't have adequate shelter, and they get arrested for sleeping. Oh, well. Or, you know, the smart ones don't. They can hide out or live gently on the land. And, you know, we have the best situation for homeless people up and down the coast as far as per capita income spent goes and so forth and so on. So you hear this mass of schmooze, which tries to detract attention from the fact that there are basic human rights violations happening, just as here, in a protest that was indeed rowdy and that was indeed loud, but was not violent, was, and I think was justifiably loud, frankly. I think, you know, that you need to raise your voice to break the silence. You need to raise your voice to engage these Democratic Party figures who apparently don't mind continuing to fund the Democratic Party as long as they can kind of pull at Sam Farr's coattail and say, oh, Sam, oh, and by the way, could you kind of let up on those Yugoslavs? And he'll smile and say, that's what I'm doing with my 72-hour ceasefire proposal, which, of course, he wasn't. And it doesn't, and we're going to talk about that later as well. Having been abused by police, says Councilmember Mike Rodkin, many times in the past, I take such charges seriously. Well, of course, my response to that is what I said to my producer this morning, which is, what have you done lately? Rodkin has, I don't recall Rodkin's involved in any disputes with the police recently. I don't recall his supporting homeless people, the homeless women who were mistreated by Sergeant Butchie, now Sergeant, then Officer Butchie Baker. I don't recall him defending the rights of poor people or dealing with police abuse any time in the last decade. I mean, I'd love him to come up with some specifics. I mean, I'm sure maybe he's thinking of something that I'm unaware of. He may be talking about something that happened 20 years ago. He prides himself on stopping or helping to prosecute the cops involved in Code Blue, the savage attacks on homeless people orchestrated from within the police department in the late 70s. And I know he's made that assertion repeatedly. I would like to see some evidence of it, and I'm not saying it's not true. I just have never heard the evidence of it. But that was 20 years ago, you know. 30 years ago, there were some. Clinton was an anti-war protester. Now he's bombing Yugoslavia. I mean, you know, you draw the appropriate conclusions here. People change in 30 years, and Rodkin, although it has to be said, he's taken a pretty consistent position on the law against homeless people. He's maintained a support for the sleeping ban ever since he first voted for it in 1979. So I don't want to accuse him of inconsistency there. He's not inconsistent in his bigotry on that issue. And I think it is bigotry, and I'm not afraid to say it. It's true. It's not just a difference of perspective or whatever you will. It's an action that causes harm to people outside every night and facilitates violence against them. But we're talking about the war, too, so let me jump back to that. And police abuse. Mike Rodkin, again, commenting on the police action at the May 22nd protest outside the McPherson Center. But we should avoid circulating false reports of police abuse, which only weaken our ability to get justice when abuse does take place. I actually believe that there are times in history where revolutionary action is called for and even violence against people can be justified. Of course, under those circumstances, no one would be surprised the police use force against people that are using violence against them. I'm just troubled by the representation that somehow in Santa Cruz the police are abusing nonviolent demonstrators simply trying to exercise their constitutional rights. There is no constitutional right to punch a police officer, no matter how righteous your cause. What I notice from this is that Councilmember Rodkin has made a judgment about what's going on. He's supposedly viewed the totality of circumstances and is essentially attacking the protesters and any kind of defense of the protesters in this action, and separating himself from them and criticizing them and so forth. Certainly has a right to do that, but I'm wondering, on what basis is he doing this? I mean, has he interviewed a number of witnesses on this issue? He sort of says he has at some point. Doesn't mention anybody's name. His witnesses he's interviewed certainly are in clear distinction to the ones I interviewed. The magnitude of the force being used by officers can be a justification for using counterforce. I mean, that is true. And that remains to be seen and to be decided. So I think his coming up with this preliminary judgment shows his pro-police bias. I think that's really important that people understand that. That he hasn't done an impartial analysis of this. That he has come to a quick conclusion. And he doesn't like Steve Argue. Steve Argue is quite outspoken at City Council against Rodkin's behavior on the sleeping ban and other issues. He regards Rodkin as a phony socialist, as many people do. How can he be a socialist and arrest poor people for sleeping outside? I don't know. He has never been able to adequately explain that. Perhaps we can bring it up on Thursday when he will be on the air for 2 hours. Rodkin also has a longer essay, Civil Disobedience Needs to Be Civil, according to Mike Rodkin. I don't really want to get into this. If I get a request from someone to read it, I will. It's available on the internet. If you want to email me at womanofsteel, WMNOFSTL, abbreviated womanofsteel, at cruzio.com, I'll be happy to forward it to you, and I forward it to most of the people around the coalition to stop the bombing in Yugoslavia. I don't think Rodkin has much credibility here. He's not involved in protest against the war. You know, he's authored a resolution, and that's good. I'm glad he did. But I haven't seen him on the streets doing anything. And when he does, and when he's involved there, then I suppose I will start paying attention to this kind of discussion. In the abstract, his views are interesting, but I'm afraid that his analysis of the Argue case shows that he's willing to jump to predetermined conclusions without talking to all the people involved. And he is also then willing to publicize that to the detriment of those protesters who still face trials. And I think that is a disservice to the protest movement. You don't have to be in solidarity believing that everything every protester does is 100% right. But running around publicly knocking them and trying to destroy their credibility, I think, is a disservice, and particularly in the middle of a war. And I got to remind everybody that there is a war going on there against the Yugoslavian people, and it's continuing to this day, it's continuing to this hour. So I would encourage people to understand that when they look at this situation. And I would suggest, if people want to talk about that at City Council to Jefe Rodkin, that they do so. You know, there is a council meeting at 7 o'clock where there's a public comment period on Tuesday in 2 days. And that's on June 8th. Come on down. And I have other reasons for wanting you to come on down, too. But I just talk forever. That is my problem. So why don't we listen to a little music, and then we'll get on to an interview. And I'm not going to even announce what that interview is until I'm sure I can find it. But do stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. I'm your host, Bathrop Spiro Robert, and we want you on the air, 427-3772.
Christ. Another weekend gone. Another Monday looking for a job. What's the odds on getting work of any kind? Finding a job, any kind of a job. Anything. Fed up to the teeth with doing nothing. Fed up with scrounging for a living. If you can call it a living. lady, please give me a job. Mister, I'm willing to work, just try me. I'll sweep the streets, I'll shovel shit, I'll do a bit of anything. Willing to turn me hand to anything, anything, anything. 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 Are they dead? The bastards didn't seem to hear me. Looking for a job. What's the odds of chanting a million? More like 1 in 3 million, that's if they're telling the truth. Cooking the books, more likely. Sick of being on the outside, in the street. Sick of being last in the queue. Sick of being looked through as if I'm not there. The original invisible man. Lady, give me a job. For Christ's sake, mister, give me a job. Not just a scheme, it's a job that I need. Not just filling in time, filling up holes, playing with weights and the chipboard. Sawdust won't fill up the holes in me days, in me life. Sawdust won't help me to live with me wife, with me kid, with myself. It's work that I need.
What is it? It's June 5th, 1999. We're talking to
Terry Johnston.
And let's see if we have an operational doodah.
Terry,
you're kind of a newcomer to the area.
Yeah, I am. I live in Baltimore.
And you're
in a certain sense, you're a visitor, but in another sense, you're kind of homeless. You had your home kind of pulled out from under your feet, right?
Definitely.
And you're a gay man.
Yes, I am.
And you're also a person with AIDS.
Yeah, I have full-blown AIDS.
Right. And you received a call from a member of your family while you were in Baltimore from across the country in Portland, right?
Right.
Tell me about that.
I've been disowned by my family since I was 18 years old. I knew I was gay when I was 16, and my family found out when I was 18, and basically went through 3 days of living hell with them. I grew up with Nazi Baptist people. And basically, you know, for a lot of years, you know, I've just been disowned by them. And
that's sort of where you came from when you were in Baltimore. But you've been working, you got away from them and started your own life. And you've been working regularly as a massage therapist, is that?
Well, when I got thrown out, I mean, I finished school and I went to massage therapy school, got licensed, started my own business, you know, made pretty good money. Met my partner, we were together 10 years, and that turned out pretty good, you know, through all of that.
But then you got a call from your sister to come visit. She said, come to my parlor, said the sister to you.
Yeah, kind of like that. Out of the blue, I got a call from her, and she was, you know, like, you know, I really do care about you, and you know, I know we, you know, the family's had a lot of problems in the past, and so I really would like you to come up and stay a couple of weeks. And I shared with her that, you know, my health wasn't as bad as while the trip was going on, but it still wasn't good, and I explained that to her, and she said, don't worry, everything's going to be just fine, you know.
How long have you had AIDS, and how does that impact your health at the present time?
I was diagnosed HIV positive December 1993. I went full blending there and got. I've had like 7 bouts of PCP pneumonia and other minor things, but during the trip is when things health-wise has really started getting bad.
And are medications proving effective in stabilizing your situation?
Basically, I'm getting sicker. The medicines really aren't doing that much at all now.
Your situation is getting worse.
Yeah, it is.
So there's, you have a number of burdens on you, which is not just, a condition of AIDS, but apparently a deteriorating condition, and all the apprehensions that would produce in any ordinary individual suffering that condition. And so your sister called you over. She knew about this?
I shared with her that she, she still seemed to persist, that everything was fine, and don't worry, you're going to have a good time, for a couple of weeks while you're here. And so, being a person who worked with coordination and ACT UP, I really should have, suspected something. And
that's your organization is concerned with civil rights for gay people.
Gay and AIDS activism, yeah.
Right.
And I didn't think about it like I should have. I guess what it was after a lot of years of not being around my biological family, I've always been a person who always held that hope that my family would change at some point. So I proceeded to hop a bus and go. And
53 days to get out to Portland?
With 12 hospital stays along the way, it took 4 weeks with 12 hospital stops.
Wow, in order to deal with the condition you have.
Well, I developed CMV in one eye during a trip, and I'm gone blind in one eye due to that, and I developed
CMV is?
AIDS retinitis.
Which means?
It's a condition that's AIDS related where you eventually go blind.
So you are blind in one eye at the moment?
Yes, one eye. And then I also developed AIDS-related dementia and some other things on the way up there, so...
You seem pretty coherent at the moment.
That's only thanks to painkillers.
Really?
Yeah.
By dementia, you mean dementia from extreme pain?
No, I'm also... right now, I'm starting to develop another bout of AIDS-related pneumonia, and my lungs are really bad, so... with some of the medicine I got from the hospital since I've been here is kill the pain.
So, you spent 4 weeks and 12 hospitals to get out to Portland, and what did you find when you got there?
When I got there, I'm at my sister's house. There was a couple of her friends from church, two females, which is kind of funny because, I love, white people are cool, so I have a lot of buddies who are dyke. And, it was basically, there's a group called Access International that's famous for saving and making gay people straight.
Through, should we say, violent and coercive means?
Exactly. Brainwashing to me.
Well, I know that the Reverend Moon used to do this, probably still does do this, in the Unification Church, and there are various groups that would kidnap people, and then you'd have the parents who would come and kidnap them back, and that was kind of weird stuff happening in the 70s. Is this group similar to that, or...?
Exactly, it really is. And so for the whole day I was there, they kept harping that they wanted to, I need a relationship with Jesus, and I need to realize that I'm on my way to hell because, I'm gay and I'm dying of AIDS, and it's God's curse on me because of my wicked lifestyle, and it was ridiculous.
Now, your reaction to this was?
Pardon?
What did you do in response to this?
I basically, being sick, I don't have a lot of the activism attitude like I did, but, I fought back the best way I could, and I know that, I've always been happy with who I am. At 15, I knew I was gay, and I had no problem with it. What I had a problem was with the rest of the family, who hate black people, who hate gays, who hate everybody else. They're miserable human beings. If I could, I'd give them a Dr. Kevorkian gift certificate.
Whoa. So, did you at some point tell your sister that it was time to stop the indoctrination process and should we take a break while you can get some rest?
I tried that because I was really sick. I was physically tired and stressed from the trip. And I told her I really need to get some sleep. And they didn't. They figured that was the best time to do it. Well, kick the guy while he's down.
So how long did this go on for?
A whole day. Then after a while, it's like the minister came over and it was harassment with him too.
It was only for your own good, you realized, Karen.
That's the bullshit she was saying. But actually, anyone that would do that to a person knowing they're ill, to me that's not for their own good. They mean nothing. And basically, you know, the next morning when I got up, she shared with me, you know, well, I had to get you away from those homosexual people. They've messed with your mind all your life, and they've twisted you around and made you a very sick individual.
Have you previously had a good relationship with her at all when you were younger?
I never had. I basically was by myself. I grew up with three sisters, my mom and dad. My whole family's like that. I've never really had my relationship has been with the gay community because that's been my genuine family. I've never had a relationship with them at all. I've always wanted to, I've always had a brain. You know, it's something my family never had. I've always thought for myself. I had certain concepts of God when I was a kid growing up. But God was way more enlightened, no matter if it's a he, she, or a it. And God doesn't see things, this is the way I felt, as far as sexuality, as far as whatever goes. God doesn't see things, if any time a label is attached to it, whether it be gay, straight, black, whatever, that's human being. That comes from us. It doesn't come from any divine being out in the universe.
You attempted to convert the church members to this philosophy, but they failed to succumb.
I wouldn't say convert. I just basically shared with them in the hope that these, you know, something would jar in whatever they have between their ears.
But they failed to join the NAACP at this point.
Exactly. They could have cared less.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a poor sinner. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Right.
So
you and your sister then spoke about this matter the next morning?
Yeah, we got up, and she gave one last try, but I could tell in her voice and the way she was acting, she knew it wasn't going to work.
Right.
So basically, she proceeded to open the door and throw my luggage out. And then I...
She didn't simply put it on the doorstep, she tossed it out the door.
Yeah. And I'm glad my boombox is pretty sturdy or else it would have broke.
Did she order you to leave first and you didn't go, or she just sort of started tossing stuff out?
She threw the stuff out first.
Sort of a dramatic demonstration of her sense that it must have been contaminated because it's been involved with you. Perhaps.
Yeah, and also maybe she thought that by being, you know, dramatic like that, that maybe I would say, okay, I give in. Right. You know, but I could be on my deathbed and there's no way that I'm going to fall for any kind of crap like that.
And what happened next?
She basically told me that, you know, well, since I don't care about myself and since, you know, I'm just so gone, and there's no hope, you know, for God with me.
They put you in the trash can and make sure you got picked up at the next trash stop.
Yeah, she just basically said, well, you're going to have to go home, and however you get home is up to you. Knowing that I'm sick.
Did you have any financial resources at this point?
I had $1,000 when I left home, and that went to all the hospital stuff, so I had no money at all, thanks to doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically...
You knew that?
Yeah. So basically, I was stuck getting home whatever way possible, and she wanted nothing to do with it.
Did you get any help from the Portland gay community?
At that point when I got thrown out, the only thing I could think of was getting home. So all I needed to do was get home.
And what did you do? The home was Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah, so basically I was stuck having to try to hitchhike home. And I was up all night long, got no sleep. 3 days later, I ended up here.
How did you end up here?
Three days worth of rides. Constantly, no sleep, nothing.
So you actually kind of came south to get to Baltimore. It's kind of a...
Well, basically, this is just how the rides went. Because I'd never been out in this part of the world, before, so I don't know, you know, I didn't know where I was at.
And you ended up at Reverend John Phillips' house. How did that happen?
Well, I didn't end up at his house. I didn't have to connect with anybody. I talked to the president of the Gay Community Center here, and he got me in touch with Reverend John.
John, any comments on this odyssey that Terry has undergone? I just think it's absolutely outrageous that in the name of God and love this situation even happened. And when Terry called me, I was just almost in tears. I was almost in tears when I was hearing his story. I was like almost in tears as I heard Terry's story. It was unbelievable. People need to understand God is love. And we don't do that, we end up people like Terry who are kicked out of their families and their lives. And then we wonder why people don't love God or have feelings for that. Well, I know that tomorrow, actually today, since we're going to be playing this broadcast, on Sunday anyway, June 6th, there's a a special Gay Pride Festival celebration, March. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, this is actually a wonderful weekend. Tonight, Saturday night, is Carnival, which will be last night when people hear this. To Sunday, today, we're going to be meeting at about 12 o'clock around Cathcart and Pacific. And the annual Gay, so about the 26th, 27th Gay Pride March in Santa Cruz, will be marching at Pacific Avenue. And we'll be winding our way over to San Lorenzo Park, where we'll have free music and talks and stuff. There'll be food booths, there'll be selling clothing, music, anything you can think
of. We'll have your sign, Homeless Gays Out of the Woods and Out of the Closets, right?
I absolutely, at 100%, am absolutely in support of everything you do, Robert. I think that you are wonderful. In our particular case, we're going to be riding in a truck, singing gospel music, and letting people know that God loves them. And then we're going to be roaming around the pride grounds just talking to people. I'm going to try to get the announcement made, but I'm not one of the speakers tomorrow.
Well, are you going to attempt to kidnap Christians and brainwash them to your vicious gay lifestyle?
Oh, yeah, we're a very dangerous cult. Yeah. We often like to say that we're out to convert the church, not the world. We want to convert the church back to love.
I see.
And that's our dangerous message.
Well, be on your toes, folks, and, you know, keep your hands near your crotches at all times. That's my advice to all you homophobes out there. Anyway, thank you, John Phillips, Reverend Phillips, and also Terry. Any concluding thoughts?
I'd just like to say that, you know, everybody seems to be in this comfort zone within the gay community. A lot of times this kind of stuff doesn't happen, but it's out there. And the right wing, you know, Christians mean no good. And the way I feel is that, you know, it's time for us to give them some of their own medicine back.
Which would be?
The same tactics that they use toward us, just put it back on them. Maybe then they'll realize what they're doing, and maybe they'll just give it up.
Any comments on that, Riverfield?
Yeah, on behalf of Lavender Road MCC, I'd like to say we don't have anything to do with that previous comment.
Well, there are any views of this community.
There are, and I totally support that. And in this case, it's like if justice was ever required or appropriate, this is it, I think. But
is there a phone number people can use if they want to assist her getting back to Baltimore or just get involved further in? Homeless people have been suffering a lot of hate crimes lately in terms of beatings of people trying to sleep at night out by people who reportedly are posing as police officers and kind of in skinhead garb, younger people. But
we have the same problem in Maryland. Yeah, we've had the same incidences. In Maryland, gay bashing is a legal sport. Both Maryland, the state of Maryland is very fundamentalist, very hardcore Catholic. We've had a lot of laws for the state of Maryland that support gay people and homeless people, and they've been ripped off the books.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
At some point, get some specifics on that. We should, you know, do more detailed analysis.
Yeah, somebody would like to help Terry out. He could absolutely use some financial assistance. You can call me at 475-1463, and I can act as a go-between between us. I'd also like to let everybody know about Lavender Road Metropolitan Community Church, which is a local church in Santa Cruz, predominantly gay, lesbian, bi, trans. Welcome to everybody. We meet at 10 o'clock at the Gay Center downtown, 5 o'clock at Grace United Methodist. Also, you can call me for information about that. But we're here for everybody. And we believe that it doesn't matter who you are, where you're coming from, this kind of nonsense is not acceptable. God loves everybody, period.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
We're told that in this scientific age we're privileged to be alive. Some folks disagree, they look depressed and say that we'll be lucky to survive. So the great debate goes on while they discuss the pros and cons of nuclear energy, the bomb and all that jive. But still and all, the fact remains that in spite of all the dangers there are gains. And many scientific knobs agree that nuclear energy means jobs. If you keep an open mind, examine all the facts, you'll find that it is true. Mrs. Thatcher says so, and the clever chaps who run the ETU. All the smart bus talking smoothies and the CEGB groovies and the monkeys in the British nuclear zoo. They never lie, they're always right. Their consciences are crystal clear, whiter than white. They're working for the underdog. There's no doubt that nuclear energy means jobs. They need uranium miners, architects and plant designers, engineers, quantity surveyors, dozer drivers and plate layers, hordes of navvies will be here. There'll be chippies, brickies, slaters, grab and pick crane operators, and the skyhook lads who seem to have no fear. And when the plant is finished, then they'll all be signing on the dole again. Reactors don't need all this mob. A couple of dozen hands can do the job. If a pressurized reactor blows its top and radioactive clouds are looming overhead, and for 50 miles around the towns and villages are silent, glowing red, there'll be jobs for undertakers, statisticians, coffin makers, and demographers to estimate the dead. And there'll be jobs for those who're saved, like scraping dead folks off the walls and digging graves. And you can work if factory trained at making plastic bags for our remains. Can you use a pen or pencil? Are you handy with a stencil? Have you flair? You may be put to painting warning signs that say keep out, beware. Can you lie and still look truthful? Can you look both wise and youthful? Can you sound sincere when talking on the air? But you don't need a sense of shame. Just do the job and say you're not to blame. And you can still convince the slobs that nuclear is another word for jobs. The biggest and the most enduring source for jobs will surely always be plutonium atoms buried deep beneath the land and sea. It will mean your children's children and their children's children's children will be lumbered with responsibility. They'll spend their lives guarding the rods, which proves that nuclear energy means jobs. Tread carefully and live in fear. This job will last a quarter million years.
That a week ago there was another instance of a beating out there?
Yeah.
Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, this guy told me he was walking across the railroad tracks and like 10 kids just rushed him and started beating him down.
This is an older man?
Yeah.
What did we say, a scruffy beard?
Yeah.
And what happened to him? What kind of injuries did he suffer?
He just got a swollen eye, stuff like that, and like they just the whole right side of his eyeball was like swollen up real bad. He's got pictures and stuff.
And when did you spoke to him about a week and a half ago?
About like a week and a half ago, yeah.
And what about yourself? You're an African American person. Have you suffered any kind of violence or threats yourself? You're homeless, right?
No, not really. Not in the past or nothing since I've been here.
Well, I can threaten you if you'd like.
That's good.
Anything else you want to add, man?
No, that's cool, man. That's good.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, he additional beating a week ago?
Yeah, it was another guy who got, he got beat up by a troll buster. Like,
you remember what he looked like or any details about that?
Yeah, he's over Wall Street right now, but I just know he got beat up. I don't know how many people or where they did it, but he just told me he got beat up too by a troll buster.
And did he say where?
I can't remember where, but he got beat up pretty bad.
What's his first name?
I don't remember his name at all.
And he's over
with us
right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
What does he look like? Pretty tall old guy, same scruffy beard, wears a old baseball cap.
Okay, not the same as the first person, right?
The other guy's kind of shorter. He's kind of like clean shaved, but he's kind of scruffy too. And I think he has the taller guy has got a little street. No, at St. Francis Kitchen every day.
Yeah. Thank you very much, man.
Who actually was one of the first cases of his reported to the police recently. Well, actually, you were reported to the police because you were hauled out to the hospital, right?
Yes, I was.
What happened, Joe?
Well, we just went...
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. You're about to hear an interview with Joe Barker, who was assaulted by skinhead trollbusters who announced themselves as police, broke into where he was sleeping, beat and kicked him, and he actually gives a much gentler account than those given by other eyewitnesses I've spoken to. He was hospitalized, and he did eventually file the police report, I think mainly because he was taken to the hospital and it became so obvious that an assault had happened that it couldn't be ignored. Here is a report by Joe Barker on his beating by trollbusters. Again, a beating that apparently the only police response it's provoked is an investigation. No arrests, even after 3 weeks to a month. They claim they know who the suspects are. They're keeping them under observation, according to Sergeants Baker and Clark, who came out to the Homeless Services Center to talk about it. And meanwhile, two more assaults that we just heard described by another witness, secondhand accounts, admittedly, but I find them not incredible, have been happening. And there is no action by the City Council or by the Homeless Services Center to set up any kind of safe sleeping zone for people, even though every night 6 to 7 people are turned away from the totally inadequate interfaith satellite shelter program to either hide from the sleeping ban, hide from the trollbusters, or hide from the police. Let's hear this account by Joe Barker about the issue.
We're here about a few blocks away. We should have been in the same one area, but it was cold and...
You were in a house, right?
It was a little shack, like.
In a shack. And you were given permission to be there?
Yeah, one of the guys got permission there.
Ron, in fact, invited you, right?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. And we were sitting there and we just talked a little bit and turned the lights out just to make sure nobody was going to be looking at us. And then about 2 hours later, we heard this pounding going, Santa Cruz Police! And I just stayed there wondering, oh no, what now? And all of a sudden, I got up and there was a little scuffing and I was ready to move. And I looked at him, and then before I knew it, I started beating my head.
White guys, black guys, Hispanic guys?
They were like punkers or something like that.
And they were dressed in black?
Well, they were all dressed in black, but they had no flashlights, but they were clinging with the police department. They were the police department. And then they broke a bottle over my head, and then one guy does a roundhouse on my kidneys.
Did they kick you?
Oh, yeah, and then that guy broke like this tree. A tree limb about that thick on my leg right there. And that broke, then put me down. And then when he broke the bar, he saw that I wasn't going down there. And then the other guy ran the big box right into my chest. And that guy was huge. And then that was it.
You went out for the count?
No, I just went down. And also, when I got up, everybody left. There was nobody there. So I ran out of there and came right here.
So then you went to the hospital?
Oh, yeah, just for a little bit.
And how long were you in the hospital?
About 3 hours.
And what kind of injuries did you end up
just bruised ribs, and that's about it.
And did you report this to the police of your own initiative, or did it just happen to the cops hear about it through the hospital scene? How did the police hear about this?
I think they called it.
They called it?
Dan and the girl.
Dan being when the person was sleeping with you?
Yeah.
In the same room?
Right.
So there were some witnesses to this happening. Ron was there too?
Oh yeah, there was three people there.
Now, was a woman a part of this group, or was this vigilante group?
I didn't even see their faces, period, because it was dark.
Uh-huh.
Real dark, and that's why it happened so quick, in an instant, and boom, I thought I was dreaming, but then I started feeling the sticks on my body, and it was...
It was a nightmare, right?
Yeah.
Have you been sleeping out since then?
Oh, yeah.
And how have you felt? Safe, unsafe, worried, so-so? What?
Safe and unsafe, both. You know,
have you heard of other people getting beaten up since you yourself were attacked?
No, not yet.
Mm-hmm. And when did this happen? Did you have a date?
No, it was about 4 weeks ago.
About 4 weeks ago. How have people at the Homeless Services Center treated you? I mean, is there concern about your condition among people you know? Are they sympathetic?
They help a lot. They let you stay in that one house, and they have good meals over there, and the whole works. The nurse.
Yeah.
They help a lot. If it wasn't for this place, I don't know where you go.
What do you think, should City Council open up a safe sleeping area for people, or is that a good idea?
It's a good idea as long as you have somebody that can control everybody that's there. Because I know John did an excellent job back here. And he said do something, everybody did it, and if one team get together, they don't want to comply, then there's rules for everybody. But we need a place like that that's
circumstances of reality, you never know. You could be an executive one day, next thing you'll be out here, you know, just anything could happen. So you've got to have a place where, you know, families or anybody in this room can go and lay down and have been harassed or beat up or something.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
About 7 years.
And have you been homeless most of the time, some of the time?
Half the time.
Half the time.
Yeah, but actually I enjoy it. It's well, it reminds me, like, can't be permanently. But it's not
so hard. Are you infamous homeless by choice?
Well, choice and by just a lot of freedom. You know, I'm an artist and a musician, so I can absorb everything real good.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the whole world in a different perspective.
Well, some say that people who are homeless in this situation don't give back to the community. Do you feel you give back to the community?
Oh, yeah. What
do you give back?
Well, we give back with both byproducts when we work. You know, you help people out, and it's like, not just taking, you know. You should have something else sweet, you know, and mop and stuff like that.
Is there something you'd like to say to folks out there who are just becoming aware of the situation? I know some of us are talking about going to city council on Tuesday night and telling them, get off your butts and do something about these hate crimes against poor people and set up a safe sleeping zone. What do you think?
Oh, that's a good idea. It would be a good idea to have a safe place, yeah. They're not going to be getting camping tickets and worrying about who's going to come over here and beat you over the head. You know, the world's just full of violence anyway, so I think that happens everywhere. So it's not good for people, you know, to happen to them at all, but it's going to happen.
Any reports on people being arrested in your case? Have you heard anybody been?
I believe in the old, if you do something to somebody, you know, I don't want to get punished or anything. Well, they should be punished, but God will take care of that. But sometimes they have to figure out how to get it to be like a dog that's getting out of hand, for the world, they sort of maintain their social behavior to install a human being.
Well, thank you, Joe. I've been talking to Joe Barker. Is it okay if we play this on the air?
Yeah, I guess so.
You don't have to say yes.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's okay.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because I think, you know, it's important to know from someone who actually experienced this what happened.
Yeah, that's true.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Okay.
Just spoke with...